Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Taking care of oneself is critical to good health. Today, I have two guests who are talking about some serious health-related issues. My first guest will be talking about vaping, which has made headlines recently across North America. As of yesterday, USA Today reported the number of vaping illnesses surged to 1,299 cases and the death toll sits at 26. In September, Ontario health officials were watching three cases possibly related to vaping, and the health minister, Christine Elliott, has called for a review of the situation related to vaping, calling for more data and input from experts before announcing any actions. And only 2 hours ago, the Council of Chief Medical Officers released a press release talking to this very issue. My second guest will be talking about an equally weighty topic, cancer. A new support group has launched in Northumberland County, and I am so pleased to have the founder and cancer survivor to tell us more. So let's get started. E-cigarettes are nothing new. According to the Heart and Stroke Foundation, e-cigarettes were first introduced in Canada around 2004. But it was not until 2018 that the federal government began regulating vaping products with nicotine under the Tobacco and Vaping Products Act, or the TVPA, as some like to say. Vaping and e-cigarettes can be a confusing subject because for many years it was not regulated and the science around it, like so many things, is not clear or easy to understand. We are so fortunate today to have in studio Maria Papaiono, the owner of e-cig Flavorium and a well-known advocate for vaping and e-cigarettes. Welcome, Maria.
Hi, thank you for having me, Robert.
So glad to have you here. Let's start by making some clear distinctions related to this topic so we can unpack what's going on in the news before we get in too deep. First, the news coming out of the United States regarding the deaths and injuries related to vaping. Many, if not all of those, are related to products that people use containing THC, something that's not allowed in Canada as yet. Can you flesh all this out to help us understand what are the differences between what's going on in the States and what happens here in Canada?
Okay, I think it's really clear to understand what vaping is. If we compare the word vaping as a verb, like injection, and it's the delivery method of a substance, and that's where the confusion starts. So what we're looking at is we're calling vaping everything right now. And what people use vaping for when they are trying to stop smoking are e-cigarettes. What has happened in the States, and I think the numbers are about 83%, if not higher, are vaping illegal black market products. So what's happening is the THC is being cut with other products, things that are not safe for consumption, oils. Vitamin E acetate has been brought up. Other contaminants are being cut to mimic that golden hue of a THC cartridge. And that's where the issues are happening, is that people don't know what they're vaping. People are not buying them from reputable sources. And the thing is in Canada, we have regulations. And if you go into a specialty vape store, and we have like two or three of them here in Northumberland, you go into these specialty vape stores, take a look at the bottles. You will see batch numbers. You will see contact information on there for who manufactures it. You will see dates. You will see proper labeling. You will know that what you have in the products that I sell in my store, you will know where they're made, how they're made, and when they were made.
Do any of the products that you sell or others sell, do any of them contain THC?
No. It is 100% illegal in the province of Ontario and in I can't speak for all of Canada, but you have to be a licensed retailer to sell any THC or CBD products currently right now. So first of all, and we have no oil. I need to make sure that's very clear, is that electronic cigarettes, e-liquid or e-juice, whatever you want to call it, vape juice, vape liquid, does not contain any oils. It's water soluble.
And why is that important that they don't contain oils? What is the negative thing that happens if they do?
So let's talk about this lipoid pneumonia. Lipoid pneumonia is caused by inhaling and heating fats. You can't create a fat out of water. You can create a fat out of oil. We have no oil in our products. We already know this. What people don't know about the Canadian vaping industry, the e-cigarette industry, shops like mine, is that we are not passive players or passive business owners. We are consumers first. The majority of us that own these businesses consume the products we sell. So the very thought that we would do something to put ourselves at risk, let alone our customers, is ridiculous.
And I also, as I was researching this, it was very interesting because there's a lot of scientists that talk about that the lungs are meant for respiration, for gases. They're not meant for consuming oils. So when the oils get down into your lungs, they're actually creating things that block your lungs' ability to properly absorb. And this is where the respiratory problems come in. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's what I've been reading too. And here's the thing is that I'm trying to read through this, but because I'm so well aware of the different linguistics involved in this whole thing and I can differentiate, it's hard for me to make sense because they use the term e-cigarette, they use the term vaping, they use the term e-liquid, they use the term THC. Oils are not found in e-liquids. That's what you use to help you stop smoking. And that's where we have to stand up and show the distinction.
So maybe it'd be a good time now to talk a bit about how e-cigarettes work. Can you just tell us the physical thing that takes place when you consume an e-cigarette?
So there's a couple of parts to an e-cigarette, and I do this all day long for 7 years, so this part is easy. You have a battery, you have an atomizer, you have a tank. So you put the three together. The atomizer is what conducts the heat to heat up the liquid. You can put a liquid in there. What we sell, what we recommend, is to put an e-liquid in there with or without nicotine. You put everything together because the tank is what contains it. There's a little chimney, for lack of a better word, because I can't explain it any other way. And once that liquid heats up, it vaporizes and a consumer will inhale it. This mimics the feeling from cigarettes. It mimics the sensation. It mimics the feeling. And it helps people quit smoking. This is stop smoking. Sorry, I'm not allowed to say quit smoking. Stop smoking. This is why this has become so successful, because it's the first time we had something on the market. And this came out on the market in 2003. We're not talking, you know, we're well over a decade, but we're heading to 2 decades of this product being on there. It creates the sensations. It creates the memory of smoking a cigarette without all the crap associated with those cigarettes.
So I think that's an important distinction, because I can imagine somebody's listening in right now and saying, well, wait a minute, you're talking about quitting smoking or stopping smoking, but you're putting nicotine into this to consume. Why is this a better alternative than taking a cigarette and smoking a cigarette?
You're not burning anything when you're vaping. You're heating something. And everything that we know and we've learned for, you know, I'm 47. So let's just say for the last 40 years is that burning. It's the carcinogenics are produced through burning.
Now, am I correct to say, I read somewhere that it's like 70 chemicals or 50 chemicals when you smoke a cigarette go in besides the nicotine?
I've heard as high as 4,000.
Is that right, eh?
Yeah. And here's the thing is that all these chemicals go in, but all these chemicals are part of creating that experience for a smoker. So the arsenic, the acetone, all that stuff creates that cigarette. And when you're vaping, you don't have those extra things added. There is nothing added to it.
And so in terms of options, then, if I'm looking to stop smoking, this is one option out of, I could do a patch, I could do gum, I can do a whole bunch of other things. This is one other option I have to stopping to smoke.
At the moment, yes.
Okay, that's good. Now, I also understand, though, that, you know, for people who might be saying, wow, is this safe? The Canadian government on their website says that vaping is a method of stopping smoking, one of the alternatives. The National Health Service out of Britain has the same. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control in the United States, same thing. Even the Mayo Clinic will say that this is an alternative. So where does all this sort of start to go off the rails then when we start to get, if all these are saying, yes, this is a possibility, why are we having such an alarmist approach now to what's going on in the States? And now, as we just said 2 hours ago, there's yet another press release coming out from a major medical group saying vaping's not good. What are the issues once we get past that?
I think I've thought about this a really long time. Here's the thing, is that kids are getting their hands on vaping products. That is our biggest issue. We saw in that release, they don't want a generation addicted to nicotine. We are changing the narrative all of a sudden. We went from, it's not the nicotine that's killing you, it's the smoke that's killing you. I'm sure you remember like all those things. Now we're trying to change back, pull back that narrative by saying, oh my God, we have these kids, they are vaping. So what's the best way in 2019 to get a kid to stop vaping? Let's remove all these products from the adults of who they're intended for. Let's not actually use the laws that we have out there to their fullest capability and stop the access to kids. Let's just make it even more difficult for adults to get it. If you look at some surveys, kids are not getting them from vape stores. They're not getting them from specialty vape stores. They're not just getting them from convenience stores. In one of those cases, Dr. Mackey, who is the CMO, the chief medical officer out of London, he refused to tell us the product that that child consumed. He refused to tell us, to the point where 90 electronic cigarette shop owners across Canada sent him their list. And he said if it was on the list or not. Later on, we found out this child purchased it from the United States. So I don't know how banning flavors, I don't know how all this moral outcry is going to stop kids from getting their hands on the vaping products if we don't actually follow the law. It's illegal to sell to a kid. If we are in such a big epidemic, why are not our public health officials, our federal officials, and our police department not cracking down on it? To me, it's called let's make it a lot more difficult. To me, it's let's just keep people smoking, because that's the only answer that I can have. If we're not using our laws to the fullest capabilities, if we're not pulling in, if we're not fining people $50,000 for selling to minors, because yes, people, that is one of the fines that you can get if you sell to minors. If we do our best and say, well, I can't really go any further. No, there are opportunities, but you know, all this red tape, all this talk about vaping is bad, let's just talk about how bad it is not getting kids to stop. The only way we're going to get kids to stop is find how they're getting it and put a stop to that.
So let me just make sure I'm clear on this. So what we're saying is that vaping is an alternative to smoking cigarettes that can help people to stop.
Yes.
Of many ways. It seems to me in our conversation, two things seem to stand out. One is that the stuff that's going on in the United States is with something that is totally illegal in our country as of the moment, but it's representing something that is a crisis in the United States. But it's not the same debate we're having here. The debate, it sounds to me like you've just described, is about people under 19 starting to vape and the whole issue of starting to vape as an alternative to smoking cigarettes amongst youth and amongst adults. Because am I getting that correct? Because I think that that's a really important distinction to make, so that we don't get lost in, well, e-cigarettes are about stopping smoking.
Absolutely. They're not about starting vaping. That's the distinction. However, when we look at what we are doing and the campaigns that are coming out from these large things, is they're recycling anti-tobacco campaigns and using them as anti-vaping campaigns. And it's really interesting because I had a conversation, and she's from Coburg, by my tobacco enforcement officer in Bowmanville. We have a shop in Bowmanville as well. And she said, it's not the same kids that you would think would smoke that are vaping. And to me, that was like, oh my God, is it the same kids that would drink energy drinks? But if it's not the same kids that are vaping that would be smoking, why are you using the same messaging to stop them from smoking and vaping?
One of the things that you said earlier that seemed really critical to me is the whole issue of enforcement. And maybe people don't understand the laws. Can you help us better understand what laws do exist and what regulations there are in place?
Okay. Smoke-free Ontario. So we'll just start provincially because municipally we don't have any laws here in this area. So Smoke-free Ontario Act talks about display and promotion and what can or cannot happen. So but we do have exemptions for specialty vape shops. So currently in Ontario, no one can sell to anyone under the age of 19. They cannot supply or furnish a vaping product to any minor. If you do so, you will get a ticket. And it's, you know what, it's not that, it can be up to $10,000. As a specialty, and also you can't display the product, but you can show pictures. And this is where we have a little bit of a, where people are freaking out. Oh my God, so much advertising at the convenience store level. As a specialty vape store, I have an exemption. However, no one under the age of 19 is allowed inside of my store. Further to that, I am obligated under law to ID anyone that looks to me to be 25. So we've kind of upped that to 30 inside of my store. Federally, we cannot sell an item with, and we get fines for breaking any of those rules. Federally, you can't furnish or sell or provide a vaping product to anyone under the age of 18. That fine is as high as $50,000. You also can't sell or promote a vaping product that has an image of an animal on it, a character, or anything like that. All our containers fall under CCCR, which means everything needs to have childproof. You need to show certificates of childproof of your bottles. You need to have a poison symbol on. You need to have contact information. There is an entire office building in Ottawa dedicated to making sure that we follow those rules.
So currently, cigarettes are regulated by the health unit, and they have inspectors that go around to make sure that convenience stores don't sell cigarettes to young people.
We have those same inspectors.
Okay. Is what you're arguing that those people need to be enforcing the existing rules?
No. I'm arguing is that we need to create, and I've been trying to do this, we need to all work together in different levels of government. Because if we are going to use the word epidemic, if we are going to use the word crisis, and then turn around and send out a press release and not walk our talk, then I'm going to call out BS on what you're really wanting to do. Because put it this way, if I felt that there was a crisis going on, and I do feel there's a crisis going on, I'm going to get every single level of government involved to make sure to curb that. For example, just yesterday, for probably the 13th time in the last 6 weeks, we've had a young kid hanging out our Bowmanville store on his bicycle talking to strangers, asking them to come in and buy him vapor products. To me, it was important enough for me to call the police department and send those photos there, not to get the kid arrested, but to get that kid to understand the consequences of what he's doing. So here's the thing, and as I'm going to challenge every single public health unit across this country right now, is that if you are going to use the word crisis epidemic, you better start acting like it is. It's not enough what we're doing. It is not enough just at the provincial level to try and enforce something. You need to reach out to, here in Ontario, Omar, our tobacco inspector on the federal level. You need to reach out to James Van Loon, who will take your calls. He took mine. And I'm not as important as a department. If we are going to use the word crisis, we need to start acting like it is and look at the laws that we have and team up. Call the Coburg Police Department. We know who's selling to our kids. Over 60 fines of kids with vaping products were caught in Coburg last year. I called the principals of every single school in Coburg and high schools and said, hey, my name is Maria. I'm here as a resource for your teachers. Do you want to know what you're getting, your kids are getting caught? I can walk you through it. I can tell you the difference between THC. I've had one person show up at my shop, one person call me back, and the other two ignore me. That doesn't seem like people trying to fix a crisis.
If that's this, not at all. I appreciate your passion very much, and I'm so glad we're talking. So if that's the situation now, what's going to happen in December? Because in December, I understand the Canadian government's going to allow the sale of products that contain THC and CBDs. Both are derivatives of cannabis. Is this going to have an impact on the e-cig industry?
I don't think it will. Our products, even though everyone intertwines our products all the time, there's a clear distinction of users. And the thing is that people who use vaping products most likely will vape THC products because they don't want to burn things. They'll probably be the ones that are quicker to adapt to edibles and such like that. So I don't think that... Do you know, I can put my tinfoil hat on right now and say, I don't think we have to worry about that. There's too many people that have friends in government and too much stock involved in our cannabis industry to allow it to crash and burn the way they've kind of forgotten about smokers.
Okay, because I guess going back to what we originally talked about, what's going on in the States, a lot of that's around the fact that there's THC, people are in some cases mixing THC vaping.
They're manipulating
And nicotine at the same time, and there's been some health concerns about that. So you don't think that there's a risk there that
the biggest risk is you need to know and trust who you buy your products from, and that can't be the dealer on the street. That can't be a 17-year-old who doesn't understand what vitamin E acetate does to someone's lungs. You need to go to reputable places, and I've always supported Roseneath, Alderville.
Yeah.
You know, the Medicine Wheel. That's where you can go and have solid conversations. This is not a product that you can buy at a convenience store, THC vaping products, for the first time. It's about knowing where you get your products, trusting the people that you get your products from, and understanding the process of how they're manufactured. This is your health. Our Constitution, our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, gives us the right to how we want to take care of our health. We shouldn't also abuse that right. We need to be informed, and we need to push for more conversations and maybe remove where the access is.
So how do we go forward?
We go forward by having honest conversations with our kids. Here's the thing. We have a huge opiate crisis. We have a huge drug problem in our community. We need to start talking to our kids about don't buy a vape off the street. Don't buy a vape from your friend. You don't need to vape. If you're going to vape something called Shatter, don't buy it off. Like, talk about the consequences. Start having honest conversations about the differences of what goes into our vaping devices. Talk. We're not talking honestly at the moment. Stop. Pause. This isn't smoking. This isn't weed. This is a whole new generation of products, and no one has been able to drop their ego and say, hey, we don't know. Maybe we need to talk to the people on the front lines who actually speak to people every single day.
Maria, this has been a great conversation. I can't believe how fast it's gone. I want to thank you so much for coming in. Maria is one of the owners of the E-Cig Flavorium in Port Hope. And on that note, we are going to take a break for some commercials. When we come back, we will be talking to a new cancer support group in Northumberland. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. And you are listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. When we are ill, we are at our most vulnerable. The more serious the illness, the harder it can be to overcome feelings of isolation and despair, leaving us feeling alone and afraid. My guest knows this firsthand as he has survived his own battle with cancer. But from this experience, he has created a group called Cancer Connects, which offers peer support in a group setting to those dealing with disease, as well as family and caregivers, so they can share their personal struggles and common problems. The group meets on the first Monday of every month at Trinity United Church in Coburg, and I'm so pleased to have in the studio with me the founder of Cancer Connects, Raj Corley.
Thank you.
Welcome, Rod.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
I understand you held your first meeting of the new group on Monday. How did things go?
It was Monday night. It went the vision that I had in March when I started to put this project together came true. It was the meeting I had in mind. It was the right amount of people, the right place, and we had 6 or 7 different cancers represented at the one meeting, as well as 6 caregivers. And the premise or the marketing approach, if you will, to Cancer Connects, in order to get it up and running, the appeal is that it's all-inclusive. It's open to everyone who's been touched by cancer. When I had cancer 19 months ago, after my operation, I went looking for a cancer group for support. And I was living in Bradford with my son. And I found a lot of support groups for cancer, but they were always exclusive. It was either prostate cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer. And I had esophageal cancer, which isn't rare, but it's not that popular. And I thought, well, when I get better, why don't I just start a group for me? And then I looked at the numbers in Coburg and thought there's no way that Coburg could survive a completely dedicated group to esophageal cancer. So then I thought, well, you know what? Why don't we do something that's never been done? Why don't we open up a meeting to everyone, including the caregivers? And when I put that on paper and started pitching it to the hospitals and the medical community, that was it.
How many people came out?
13.
And I realize that some of this may be pretty personal. Can you, without giving away too much, can you give us an idea of the things that got talked about or some of the topics that you shared at the meeting?
Sure. First one that comes to mind was a young fellow. I would say maybe 40, 45, been dealing with pancreatic cancer for many years. And he's in his cancer lifespan, he's been told 4 times he was going to die within 6 months. And so far, that hasn't happened. But that's a lot of weight to carry around. We had another woman who had bone cancer, and they weren't sure what it was until just recently. They've been putting her through the grind. So what we had was a lot of people with different kinds of cancers who, to me, were kind of the demographic I think we're going to attract mostly is from the diagnostic stage to about 5 years out. The people who are at our meetings Monday night were in that demographic. We weren't getting people who were 10, 12, 13 years cancer-free. We were getting people who were in the midst of having issues around cancer still, even though they were cancer-free. So we had a good representations of different types of cancer. We had one woman, I won't get into age or anything, but she had written me a letter last week prior to coming to the meeting, explaining her circumstances and how she's not going to bother with chemo, how she's not going to bother with radiation, how she's not going to bother with an operation, because at her age, all of those things could kill her before the cancer could. So we talked openly with her about that situation. So these are the types of intimate conversations that we're having with people when they show up.
Now, you would appreciate this maybe more than some of the listeners, but, you know, when we talk about the different stages, you talked about being diagnosed, people who are being treated, and then those who are in recovery. Can you distinguish sort of what different challenges each of those people face and why it's so important to make those distinctions
right
in terms of sharing?
Well, I'll try to answer the first part of that question in stages.
Okay.
Generally, you won't know if you have cancer if you're in stage 1 or 2. It takes a long time to mature, and usually it's by late stage 2 or early stage 3. I was in late stage 3 going into stage 4, and I got fast-tracked because there was still time to have an operation that would result in some success. Had I waited another year or didn't find out for another year, I probably would have been dead. But so the stages are interesting in the sense that cancer takes a while to show its head, and usually you'll know it by the end of stage two or into stage three. What was the other part of your question?
So we talk about people who are diagnosed,
right,
which is one sort of phase, and then you talk about part of the group being people who are treated,
right,
and then you talk about people who are in recovery.
Right. Well,
so each of those must present their own set of challenges.
They do. I'm in recovery.
Yes.
Like, I'm cancer-free as of last week, my last CAT scan. I'm 19 months cancer-free. Now, I keep going back for 5 years every 11 weeks to make sure that's remains the case. So let's say in my case, back in 2017 in November, I was diagnosed after an endoscopy with esophageal cancer. Okay, that was on a Monday. By Wednesday, I was in Kingston seeing an oncologist, and 5 weeks later, I had sold my house and everything in it, and I was living at the Princess Margaret Cancer Society because they thought that that it was advancing to stage four pretty quickly. So between the time I got diagnosed and the time I started active treatment was only 5 weeks. Many people go months before they go from diagnostic stages to treatment stages.
But I can also imagine, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine to learn of a diagnosis is one set of emotional, mental, physical,
right,
challenges. And then I can imagine that in treatment, you go through yet another stage and another set of different things. And then when you get recovery, again, there must be certain emotions.
We're working backwards from recovery. I mean, if I'm going for CAT scans in December, well, about a week before I go for the CAT scan, I'm starting to think, what happens if it's back? Like, what am I going to do if this has come back? Then I go for my CAT scan, and then I wait 2 more weeks to see my team. And that whole time, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Should I rewrite my will? Should I sell my condo? Like, do I want to go through all of that again? The anxiety, like for me, when I was told I had cancer, it broke me. But I was also very happy because finally there was an answer as to why I was so sick. We finally had an answer. Because I was on such a rapid track to get to Toronto during those 5 weeks, I didn't think anything about cancer. I just had to get my house sold. I had to get my life moving to Toronto. It was when I got to the Princess Margaret Hospital and started radiation that I realized I was in treatment. And I just kept going through treatment, through radiation and chemo for almost 3 months. Then I was so zonked. Then I had an operation. And then my cancer was gone. I had real no time to be anxious. I didn't have 2 or 3 months to sit and wait for treatments to start.
So I guess then a group like the one that you formed, mm-hmm, when you're going through each of those stages, each one has certain emotions, certain physical challenges, all those kinds of things going on. And it's your group that gets to talk about that,
right,
and to support each other as you work your way through all these different steps.
Right. And the support comes, like we say in all our print, we're not doctors. We're here to support and try and maybe put you in the right directions. Like one of the women that wrote me last week, I ended up relaying her information to Sandy at the Survivor Thrivers, because this woman was having issues with breast cancer. So we can act as a resource group and put you with other people. But mainly, what we talk about at these meetings is our own experience in certain areas of our cancer, whether it's recovery or diagnostic. And everyone can relate because we all have the same feelings. We all have the same fear. We have the same anxiety. Do I worry about cancer coming back? Yeah, I do. Do they? Yeah. So what do you do to, you know, how do you deal with that? So it's any issue that we actually don't spend as much time talking about cancer issues as we do about living issues and how we live around it.
One of the things your literature talks about is providing a safe environment for open discussions. So what do you mean by a safe environment? What does that mean?
passive, not hostile, generally like a lot of other groups. We hold it in a church. There's a certain kind of sanctity to a church. Whenever somebody walks into a church, they become a little less armed. The groups are small. We have qualified people who know how to facilitate the meeting. We offer refreshments, and it's a tone. It's a tone of safety. There is a confidentiality agreement that each person signs. Basically, it's what's said here stays in the room.
So you mentioned you have qualified people to help facilitate this session. Can you tell us a bit about those qualifications and the special training or education right. that some of these people have to do this?
Well, one of the women we have working with us, her name is Judy, and she spent 25 years mental health in Belleville, working in mental health as a facilitator. I've spent 27 years in another support group. We don't really need to go into the details of that, but I've facilitated and been a chairperson for thousands of meetings, and I've kind of brought a bit of the formatics of that program into the discussion meetings of our program. We were set up for 30 or 40 people Monday night, because after those newspaper articles came out on this whole group, my phones at home were lighting up, the emails were coming in. I thought, oh my God, we're going to get bombarded with people. And what am I going to do? Because you really can't have an intimate discussion group with 40 people. So when it turned out to be 13, we rearranged the chairs, we rearranged the format within minutes we were having. You know what happened? I sat back, and people were just starting to talk to each other, to get to know each other, and I didn't say a word, and the meeting started. It just evolved.
It's nice when things are organic like that.
Yeah, and that's what because I think the thing is that if you've got 13 war veterans, 15, 13, from Vietnam sitting together in a room in a church, never met before, I'll bet you you're going to share some information and some stories, because the background you have is such a commonality that you feel like brothers.
Does this group have any connections to local institutions like the hospital or mental health or cancer organizations?
Yeah, Cancer Care Northumberland. I've worked with the hospice group. The NHH, if I may just take a minute here. When I decided to do this group in March of this year, I had to nail a couple of things down really quickly. The name, get it registered as a business, own the domain names, the internet names, the email names. So I had a framework to work in. And then the next thing I needed to know or find before I even started thinking about format was a venue. Let's nail down the venue now. So I ended up going up to the NHH, because there are other meetings that happen there that I go to. And I thought I could try and get the room there. So I ended up speaking with a woman named Joanne Jury, who's now the patient care manager. And she was just moving into a new position, so she passed me off to Jennifer Gillard, who is the communications director. Jennifer saved me at least a year's work by opening the doors to all the community facilities I needed to know about to get this on the map. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic what she did for us. So things just started to just roll, and no one has turned us down for any request. All our artwork has been free. The radio station here has given us public service announcement time, as well as access to shows like yours. People think it's a good idea because it's open. It's just that's what sells this thing. Is that anyone connected with cancer? Remember, we had 7 cancer victims, survivors at the meeting. We had 6 caregivers. That's usually unheard of.
And also, too, I don't have the stats in front of me right at the moment, but I know that cancer treatment is an area at the Northumberland Hills Hospital that is on the rise.
Yeah.
So much needed in the community. What about other groups, mental health groups? Are you getting referrals? Have you worked out that kind of networking yet, or the Cancer Society?
Yes, I'm affiliated with the Canadian Cancer Society. I'm up on their webpage as a resource for this area. We're on 211, mm-hmm. that service. Mental health, right now I'm talking to the people at Cameco, and trying to get a relationship going with them, because they're now moving into the mental health field. At this point in time, that's all I can think of.
Okay. Are you a registered charity or a nonprofit?
No, I'm going to be looking for not-for-profit status next year, because what I want to do is I want to build a couple of other branches as we move forward with this. I would like to see a group. I don't know if Northumberland County could support two, but I know for sure that Peterborough could, and I'm already speaking with the hospital, and I'm speaking with Lake Ridge in Oshawa, but potentially doing a group in Whitby. And I've been asked by Sunnybrook and Princess Margaret to set this up in their hospitals.
Wow.
That's too big right now, though.
It sounds like it.
I said next year, once we get this one rolling.
Sure.
So that's kind of on my to-do list.
Besides yourself, are there others involved?
Not really, no. I have some volunteers who help me out, yeah.
So there's no kind of board or overseeing body?
No, there'll have to be if we go not-for-profit. We'll have to go that route. But I want to investigate that. Matter of fact, one of the people at the meeting this past week is a chartered accountant. So I can get some good, stable advice from people within our group.
Always a good friend to have.
Right. And if we have a lawyer in our meeting, well, you know what? These people will want to help because they understand where we're going with it.
Is there any cost involved with this?
Yeah, startup cost so far has been about $3,600.
Wow. How have you financed it then?
Well, I did it. I financed it myself, and then I got a grant from Cameco.
Okay.
That was a successful grant back in July, and they just asked that we don't divulge how much that was. It was enough to cover what I put out, but most of it was for printing. You have to pay for hard costs. So printing, some office equipment, some phones for the answering machines, that kind of thing. But once that's all installed and ready to go, which it is, there should not be any covering costs except for the church. Just Brew It here in Coburg is supplying all our refreshments for free. So really now the overhead will be in promotion and will be in rent.
Going forward, what are you hoping for?
Well, I'd like to get a solid base here, and I'd like to work hand-in-hand with other cancer support groups in and around the area. For example, there's a place called Amos in Belleville, which is an all-inclusive cancer support group. We've been working with them. We've been to their meetings, see how they conduct their business. I would like to see, in my career with Cancer Connects, 5 locations, 1 outside the province. And I figure that might take me 5 to 6 years. So that's my personal agenda.
If someone's listening right now, how do they find out more? How do they reach out? How do they connect with this? How
easiest
do they get involved?
Way is on the internet. CancerConnects.com. It's all there. Cancer, CONNEX.com. Tells you what we do, where the meetings are, our phone number, my phone number, our email. And that seems to be the way that people are finding us.
For those who aren't as tech savvy, how can they reach out? Or can they just show up?
They just show up. So or phone me.
Okay.
They can phone me at my personal phone number, which is 416-802-1166. That's 416-802-1166. Or our office number is 905-372-7566. My email is shareyourvoicecanada@gmail.com.
Or on the first Monday
of the month,
they can show up at Trinity United
right.
Church at
7
what time?
O'clock.
7 o'clock.
Yeah.
How long do the meetings go for?
Hour, 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they need to bring anything?
Nothing.
Just themselves.
Just themselves and whatever it is they're going through. We had a caregiver on Monday night. Her husband passed away 4 years ago, and this is the first meeting she could find that she could deal with some grief. So it's an open door policy, and I really, really believe that's the key here is, you know, you in order for a group to survive, you have to have variety, you know? Like the Survivor Thrivers, they've got a really good thing going for them with that boat. that they have to row around, because that's teamwork, and they get out there and they work together, and like that's really a great way to build loyalty. I wish I had a boat, but we want to build a good base where people can help people, and refer people to us, and we can refer to other people. Monday nights, even on holiday Mondays, there's only a few of them next year. We're still going to have meetings. 7 o'clock. We booked the room for a year, so we're there.
Fantastic. I wish you all the best with this, Rod, and good luck with it. I hope you do get to 40. That'd be a positive problem to have. Yes. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to different people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. You may also want to tune into Northumberland 89.7 FM on election night. I will be hosting our results coverage that evening. We have an exciting panel of experts and reporters in the field that should give you the latest results and insightful comments as things unfold. So I hope you will join us, and it should be great listening. I also want to, again, thank you all for tuning in. Please join me again next week. And if you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves about this show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page at Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at @rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this.